The purpose of Retire with Style is to help you discover the retirement income plan that is right for you. The first step is to discover your retirement income personality. Start by going to risaprofile.com/style and sign up to take the industry's first financial personality tool for retirement planning. Well, it looks like we're talking about long-term care for the long term. Get it? Okay, that's the last time I let Alex write one of these after surgery.
Listen up, party people. Welcome to this episode of Retire with Style. And we're continuing our long-term care arc with the continuum of long-term care. Wait. Take it away,
Very
man.
Very well put, Alex. The continuum of long-term care. Say that 10 times quick. No, not really.
The rain in Spain.
But we're now episode 3 into the arc. And yeah, we're really just moving along here in terms of wanting to talk about how you make that transition generally, help at home. Perhaps at some point it becomes paid help at home rather than informal help. Adult daycare centers, assisted living facilities, nursing homes, and then we can add hospice to the list, but that's not necessarily specifically a long-term care thing. But yeah, we kind of want to break down what each of these are. And before we get to that, though, I don't know if there's anything new going on in your life that you'd like to share.
I'm glad you asked, Wade. That's so kind of you. Are you just saying that to go through the motions?
The people who tend to really skip the beginning of the episode, they're like, okay, we missed content, but now we got this.
wait, I'm sorry. Do my voice again? Let me hear this. How is it? How do I sound?
What was that? Oh, is this referring to a review? I don't remember that.
No, I thought you were doing a soundbite of me saying, oh my God, we missed content. No, nothing going on. I mean, where are we? In my life, Wade and I caught up in, where were we?
Kansas. Yeah, we were in Kansas City.
We were in Kansas.
A few weeks.
We had sunlight, hail, and snow all in one day. Amazing.
It was like a high of 80 degrees, a low of 17 degrees. It's a pretty big swing.
It's crazy.
Oh, you were still there. I left before the 17 degrees arrived.
Oh, you did?
That's coming what happened. In, blowing in with the cold northerly winds.
I think they're blaming it on Jackson Mahomes. So we'll see how that goes.
The brother of the quarterback?
Yeah, that's the brother that's always like in the way. Yeah, kind of like people say I'm like that with you.
Yeah, I missed that gossip from the Kansas City behind the scenes football.
Yeah, something like that. But no, Wade, next Monday coming up, I don't know if you guys have been listening in, knee operation number 3 on 2 knees. I got my knee replacement on the left side. We'll see how that goes. Partial knee replacement.
Good luck with that.
So I think I can single-handedly do an episode on knee surgeries for the group at some point.
Yeah.
So I had to slow down on the pull-ups, Wade. So we had a February thing going on. We'll have to call out TO on that and revisit that.
I did
that.
Get my 6-in-1 shot pull-ups in so that I made that February goal, but I haven't been keeping up with a very long march.
I had to do like 12, I think, and I did 6, but I didn't try. You know what happened? I got all amped up, and the first few days after the thing, I was just doing constant pull-ups, and then I went to the gym, and I did something for my forearms, and I just like got like tennis elbow immediately. And then I was like, the gods are telling me to slow
your knees
down.
Fixed, it's elbows next.
No. That's already it's recovering, but I had to slow down on that, so I didn't want to overdo it. Plus, I wanted you to catch up. We make a game out of it. You know what I mean? It's one of those things, kind of like you do with me on the podcast. You give me some information to catch up, and then you separate from the pack, and then I catch up, and then you separate from the pack, kind of like that.
All right.
But with now we'll do it with healthcare.
Not healthcare, though. That's an important distinction.
Long-term care. Sorry. See that? I'm already...
There's two distinct categories in the retirement income world.
Thank you. Long-term care. Well, the only thing I would say too for our guys, our folks, is that this episode, we're just going to level set. There's a lot of definitions of what things are. Like the previous one, we just dealt with, look, these are the costs you're kind of looking at. Let's get that out of the way. This one is, and cost being both just time, you know, your time is cost, or asking your family to run you around. That's a cost, you know, believe it or not. I've experienced that actually quite a bit. But, you know, I'm fortunate enough that it's not an issue, but there is a cost. Here, we're kind of just laying the groundwork on what the different terms are. So it's kind of one of these vocabulary sessions, if you will, kind of what we did with annuities when we did that piece. And we'll get into it. But we have interview. We have lots of stuff in store for you folks, such as interviews with experts, with advisors, with folks that are part of these facilities, et cetera. So we're gonna do right by this. But by doing right by this is we're going to dig deep no matter what. So it's kind of like, wait, oh, you know what else? Remember, we went to New York and we heard Peter Attia.
That's right. Oh, yes, right? Yes.
Yeah, yeah. And he was talking about the healthcare stuff. And he got into his podcast and he said, look, I don't shy away from getting into the details. And so I guess that was a great phrase, because we won't either. And we just need to level set. And there's no other way to do it but to discuss the terms. So buckle in and away we go. Right, Wade?
Right. Intro number two. There we go. So yeah, we're talking about, again, the continuum of long-term care from the early stages to the end stages, and just defining what those different levels are. And of course, each individual may not progress step by step through each level of long-term care need. Some of the steps are skipped. Some of the steps may be the only one that's used. But yeah, it's really just an opportunity to walk through less care to more care and what that can look like. And then if we have time in today's episode, we'll see how long this part takes. But also, continuing care retirement communities are a newer innovation that allows you to bundle some of these different categories into one living arrangement. So we can also talk about that. But that's the idea. Not everyone's going to necessarily require moving to an institution. Proper planning for this can help people to stay at home longer. People do want to stay at home. Like if you ask, well, and actually there have been surveys of this. So one of the surveys we've seen just noted, although that was quite a bit later in my notes. So a survey from Merrill Lynch of people 50 and older, where would you like to receive long-term care? 85% viewed receiving care at their home as being preferable to moving to an assisted living facility or nursing home. So helping as much as you can in-home care.
There's an inverse to that though, Wade. When they asked the son-in-laws where would they like their mother-in-law to receive that care, only 15% said at home with us. So, you know, take that. That one's for Manny Vasquez out there. We love you, Mirelia. and there it is.
All right.
and what's the general progression that folks should expect? You know, it's more and more, not less and less. But what does that more and more usually look like?
So it starts with informal care provided by family or friends at home. That's just maybe help with basic household tasks and things. Eventually, as that becomes more onerous, it may require paid help at home. So having a healthcare aide visit a few times a week to provide some in-home care and service, as well as probably at that stage also the informal care from family or friends. Adult daycare centers can step into that at some point in terms of if the caregiver needs to work and not completely give up their career, the adult daycare center provides an opportunity to get care at another facility during the work hours. And also that's good for providing social arrangements, social networking opportunities and so forth for the individual. Then eventually you get to the stage where it may be required to move out of the home. Assisted living is the next step of people who need help with more tasks, but still have a degree of independence, then nursing home care, and then hospice, which again, isn't really long-term care, but cap the end there with hospice care.
Yeah. Okay. And so
that's the episode.
Why don't we break it up by skilled versus... Oh, sorry, I'm on.
No, I mean, yeah, we're just going to now dig in deeper on what some of these different things mean.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
For a second, I thought I was on mute. That's why I was like, oh, wait, let me check real quick, because I was coughing and I hit the mute button and I said, did I not unmute myself?
Sounded like you were.
So,
it sounds like you're asking about skilled versus custodial care, but I'll let you proceed.
Yes. So, Wade, what do you think about skilled versus custodial care? What does that mean if that comes up?
Yeah, those terms are important because this gets back into partly with the conversation. Medicare is not a long-term care provider. We'll define, especially when we get into long-term care funding mechanisms, exactly when Medicare might provide limited support. But if it does, it's always for skilled care. So that's where you really need medical attention as part of the care from a skilled, licensed care provider. Most long-term care isn't necessarily skilled. It's called custodial care or non-skilled care. And it's for those chronic conditions where people need help with the activities of daily living. So it's not necessarily medical intervention per se, but help with the six activities of daily living that we talked about, I believe, in the first episode of this arc. Help with bathing, continence, dressing, eating, toileting, transferring to and from a bed. So it's not medical care. It doesn't require a skilled professional. It's often provided by family members, friends, unlicensed workers, but that's what custodial care is. And most long-term care is related to custodial care. It's really only when you start getting to the levels of, well, more professional type paid support and or having individuals move to assisted living or nursing homes where the skilled care becomes a more important component as well.
Just a question. If you know it, you know it. If not, that's fine too, Wade. I don't mean to put you on the spot. But if someone's speaking to somebody about the type of care they need, and if it's about medicine, you know, providing, you know, giving them medicine, would you put that in the skilled category or custodial care?
Well, I think if it's just a matter of you've got like the week of the pill box where each week you have each day you have the pills the person needs to take, and you've got prescriptions and all that. that probably could fall more in the custodial care because informal family members and so forth could be doing that. It doesn't require medical intervention that requires a higher degree of medical knowledge necessarily. So I think in most cases that'd be custodial care.
Okay. So that's skilled care, custodial care. Now, what about geriatric care versus geriatric care managers versus care coordinators?
Well, those are really two terms for the same thing. But geriatric care managers or care coordinators are individuals who can help navigate all these long-term care decisions. They're professionals that you can pay, or as we talk later in the next episode about, or possibly two episodes where we talk about different funding mechanisms for long-term care, oftentimes a benefit of a long-term care insurance policy is that a geriatric care manager or care coordinator will be provided on your behalf to help you navigate making all these decisions, where to move to, what are the terms of the contracts and so forth. And that's because this can be complicated and it's not something people have experience with until the need arises. It can be very valuable and helpful to work with a professional who's able to help with all this decision-making when someone needs long-term care.
Okay. And then home care, what would that entail here? Like, you know, such as long-term care, you know, when it begins, et cetera.
Yeah. So that's where we're kind of talking about the first stage or the first step with needing care. And it begins with you need some help around the house. And we talked two episodes ago as well about, we've already mentioned again, the activities of daily living, but then the incidental activities of daily living, things like house cleaning, managing the household finances, driving, that sort of thing. That's where people may need help first, ultimately, and then gradually need help more with activities of daily living. And as a first step, because this is always going to be probably before any long-term care insurance benefits are triggered and so forth, home care starts with informal care, family members, friends, people who are just part of your social network, who can step in and help with some things around the house, potentially help with some of the activities of daily living in an informal manner, not necessarily paid right away. At some point, it may be necessary to also get paid help for these sorts of things, but it's really having help with that custodial care, helping with those activities of daily living, still at home, before moving to an institution. It's kind of the first stage that people will experience as they make that transition towards needing more help with long-term care.
And would you say there's some business, and if you don't, if you can't go to family members for whatever reason, are there businesses that offer these services as well?
Yeah, absolutely. It's a big growth industry where there's plenty of businesses that are set up to provide at-home care, caregivers who will visit the home, provide services, perhaps paid on an hourly basis or some sort of contract. But yes, absolutely. When you get to the point, or you, if you don't have any informal caregivers who can help out, you can make that transition towards getting the sort of paid help at home.
And now the only thing I would say for here, for those of you listening at home, and it could be yourself receiving the care, or it could be, you could be a son, a daughter, that you know that people are chipping in to help your parents. This is where I've personally seen, not directly, I've been fortunate not to be directly like with my own parents, but I've seen close family members have their parents effectively get ripped off. This is where, you know, you're Blanche DuBois a little bit and you get by with the kindness of friends, but this is where it comes back to, it can come back to haunt you in terms of, there's a difference if you're overseeing them or if it's yourself, where you're, there's a difference between delegating and abdicating. And you want to be careful here, because this is when you're that person is very susceptible to ultimately just getting ripped off, because you're having someone in their home, pretty much, you know, getting access to things that perhaps are sensitive, such as bank accounts, etc. And you just want to be very careful and tread lightly around that, just in case.
Yeah, the whole elder abuse angle. And I thought Blanche DuBois got by with the kindness of, from the kindness of strangers, not friends.
Yeah, you're right. What did I say?
You said friends.
What did I say? All right, Stanley Kowalski. sorry. Said it the wrong way.
So, but you make a really important point, though. This is an area where you do have to be concerned about elder abuse, having someone you don't know who's now entering the home and has access to things. And if the person's not as mobile and so forth, may not be able to fully monitor what's going on. But if you do have a trusted at-home caregiver, this can also really help as well, reduce some of the stress for the informal caregivers and allow them to focus more on social interactions rather than providing the care, the bathing and the different things that can be stressful. So letting those family members focus on social interactions rather than being the caregiver themselves, that could be a potential benefit here.
Let's take a moment to let the audience know that this show is sponsored by Retirement Researcher. You can learn more about Retirement Researcher at retirementresearcher.com and subscribe to our newsletter, where you'll receive weekly actionable information for your retirement planning benefit. Retirement Researcher is an online community devoted to helping you create the retirement income plan geared towards your goals.
Hey, Wade, do you think Tennessee Williams had home health care when he choked on a bottle cap or something like that, right? Isn't it something weird like that?
I don't recall that particular detail of his biography.
Yeah, I think he choked like on some sort of bottle, a drink, some sort of drink bottle, I think. I'm sure he could have used home health care at that point in his life.
To pause and look up his Wikipedia. I'm not aware of that.
No. We'll hear it in the comments. I think I'm not 100% sure. Okay. I've been wrong many times. So, all right. So that's the long-term care. That's getting someone in there. Now, if you're in that sort of path, then aging in place is obviously a consideration that you're looking at, because you're having people come into your house. What are some things around there? Because this is a movement that's starting to grow. Why don't you take it away?
Yeah. So aging in place, it's a movement. It's about can you make sure you can live at home and receive in-home care? Because like we mentioned earlier, most people really prefer to stay at home. They don't necessarily want to move into an institution. But you have to make sure that you've laid the foundation where you can safely and comfortably age in place, stay in the home. And that can require some home renovations, different things. We can talk about that. Just making sure that the home is safe and that you're able to move around. Having a community support so that aging in place is easier if there's social services that maybe deliver meals or provide social interaction or even providing transportation to doctor's appointments. Because the government is realizing that it's cheaper to support people aging in place at home than it is to move them to institutions, we are seeing trends where Medicaid is making it easier. This is one of the funding mechanisms once you've run out of other options. But being able to support aging in place or at home care through Medicaid, just realizing it's cheaper to do that. But again, to age in place, the home has to be set up and retrofitted to make that feasible.
And wait, though, I think I would say this, and not to take this podcast off this angle, but is this where a reverse mortgage could be appropriate as well?
Yes. One of the many possible uses I talk about with reverse mortgages is providing the funds to support paying the costs for aging in place. Because we can talk about what some of these potential home renovations are, but yeah, they can be expensive. And so using a reverse mortgage to tap into the home equity to pay for these home renovations to allow the individual to age in place can be a great potential way to use a reverse mortgage. Sure.
Yeah. And so think about it. We're going to get towards the end of this podcast, if we get to it today, if not next one, about what are some options. And you're talking about continuing care facilities, et cetera. So if you end up selling your house to go to a place that could accommodate you aging in place, where you could have potentially taken out a reverse mortgage, age in the house that you want, and make sure it fits your needs, et cetera, with neighbors that you know, maybe it would have been a better option. Just FYI from that standpoint. And Wade, I did look it up. He choked to death from inhaling the plastic cap of a bottle of the type used on nasal sprays or eye solutions.
Okay. Well, I learned something new.
What a way to go. Not to make fun of that, but that's like, you know, one of our greatest playwrights dies eating a hot dog or something like that. Man. Life is cruel, isn't it?
So at-home care may or may not have helped there, depending on how lodged that was.
I like how you brought that back together, Wade. Wow.
But yeah, I learned something new.
Maybe someone need, yeah. he had like itchy eyes or something. Poor guy. All right. What are some basic things when we're talking about aging in place? You were talking about, okay, it's going to retrofit the house. What are some things to think about that you maybe not be thinking about? And frankly, this is stuff that I remember doing for my parents. And there's simple things like, having a seat in the bathtub. Because I got to the point that my mom could not like get into the bathtub and stand, you know, taking a shower, et cetera. What are some things just to, you know, pepper in our listeners' heads right now about things to think about?
And some of these are easier or cheaper. Others might be quite expensive to do, but yeah, some ideas.
Some of these you can do at Home Depot. Some of them you're going to get a contract and you need permits.
These days, magazines have a lot of ads for things like some sort of walk-in bathing facility. So walk-in shower with grab bars, other bathroom safety features, not having to be required to step over a tub. That is just one basic thing to make it less likely to get injured when bathing. So walk-in showers. Something that would maybe the most expensive one potentially on this list, making sure that everything the person needs is available on one floor of the home so that they don't have to use stairs to get to kitchen, bathing facilities, and bedrooms. That everything they need is on one floor. And if that's not possible, perhaps installing an elevator or, and I don't know the name of it, but you know, those electric stair lifter type things. You see a lot of ads for that as well. Something.
As long as you don't have gremlins in your house.
Yeah, just recognizing that it may be increasingly difficult to climb stairs at some point. And so making sure that's not required to be able to get to a restroom or to be able to get to a kitchen becomes important.
I think living up north, I'm from Miami, so a lot of the houses were one-story homes. Just I think it was more for hurricane damage prevention. Although right now with construction, many of them are two, three stories. But my in-laws did this, and my wife's parents are divorced, so on both sets. But they both kind of have moved into one level floors, one level houses, like not Ramblers, but like they're not two stories by any means. And I think part of that was self-conscious of the fact that I don't want to go up and down the steps in my mid 80s or 90s, because there was that stat. What did we hear? Remember, Peter T. I'm doing this from memory, so don't kill me here. But if you break your femur or hip past, let's just say, age 65, there's something like a 20 to 30% chance that you may not survive past the year.
Yeah, the next year. I think that's the right number. I
remember something like that. And that's not even standard of living and any of that. I'm just talking like life or death. So you can imagine all that other stuff is worse. And so you want to give yourself the best chances of not getting into trouble. And to me, I think a single floor house is the way to go.
Another thing he said that kind of resonated was, usually we talk about like the top four killers, and I'm not sure I can name all four, but it's like cancer, heart disease.
Well, number one is bottle caps.
Right. No, but he said, but like a close kind of honorary mention for fifth would be falls. And so a big part of aging in place is trying to reduce the risk of falls. And we'll see that more with some of these other ideas as well.
Wade, that's also why I'm trying to get you to do pull-ups, my man.
Yeah, so I...
grip strength. Myself. Apparently, he's big into grip strength.
Oh, yeah. He was talking about that too. Well, we all could pick up a copy of that book there. So I now have my copy of Outlive. And it's a long book. It's like, try to get through it at some point.
Yeah. So there's things to begin. And I think this is where things are getting interesting, simply because I'll talk about my parents, my mom, and the smart home, right? The things you can do right now, and we're not going to make this into a tech episode by any means, but you can do so much now with smart homes just by having the Amazon Echo or like a Google, you know, some sort of hub. I mean, I can literally look at what's going on in my mom's room right now and talk to her. And we're having an immediate call. I can control lights in her house, et cetera, yep. Simple from here. And so you'd be surprised. Those developments are going to be better and better, not worse and worse over time. So aging in place is actually an interesting thing if you really design it outright. Just FYI, I think you can do a whole series on just smart homes that are actually not in the future, but right now, to help facilitate this kind of movement. You should check it out for your mom, Wade. I don't know if you have that right now, but the sort of smart home echoes and stuff like that are quite amazing.
Yeah, and that's on the list, so I won't have to mention that one when we get there. But absolutely, the monitoring health status, and that could be part of it too. It's not just like being able to see in the house and control lights, but actually getting real-time health updates, what's the pulse, that sort of thing, and also helping to monitor that medicines are being taken and so forth. And just the alert buttons that have been around, I think, at least since the 1980s. But yeah, that technology is also very important with aging in place. Another important factor is potentially needing wheelchair accessibility. That could be another expensive one on the list. But making sure that there's a ramp so you don't have to climb stairs to get in the home. There's a wheelchair accessible ramp. The doors are wide enough. The hallways are wide enough to fit a wheelchair. And having at least one wheelchair accessible entrance to the home. So that's another one of the more expensive options on the list. Another option that's not going to be as expensive and something people may not think about, but just for door handles and faucets, having levered handles rather than twisting knobs. I guess that's back to your grip strength there, Alex. Being able to just push a lever rather than having to twist a knob is going to be helpful as people age.
It's all fun and games, wait until you need ketchup. Yeah.
Having good lighting is important as well. Just making sure that things are visible. Having the cabinets, closets, that sort of thing be low enough so that, well, especially in the kitchen, if you can cook while sitting so that you've got the cabinets and so forth low enough to be able to make that feasible, that's an important consideration.
No, it's amazing. We laugh, but now that you think about it. Well, no. Thank you for bringing the seriousness into this conversation. Yeah. No, but the commercials in the 80s, I was thinking of the clapper, and I've fallen and I can't get up when you had mentioned something. But look, those were one of these best-selling SE on TV items for a reason, right? You know, it's one of these things that there's a significant need. And if you can set yourself up in your house to, you know, delay the inevitable, I mean, why not? And the good news is I think a lot of these things are getting significantly better with technology, and it doesn't require an engineer to set it up, frankly.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. That's it. And so if there is a day where you need to, before we get out of the house, what's your take on the adult daycare, community centers, and those kind of things?
Real quick, one more thing on the aging in place that's important. Back to the idea of trying as much as you can to reduce hazards to falling, not having rugs or other items on the ground that can cause tripping hazards. That's a pretty simple one, but then also potentially just having non-skid softened flooring in the home as well to help cushion any falls. That'd be another important consideration.
Okay. Surprised you didn't put elbow pads or stuff like that here.
Yeah, you could wear football helmets.
Roller derby. No. But you're right. There's things you could do. Why not? Especially the falls. That's why I said the first floor, that kind of thing. Falls are something that you don't want to mess around with in a major way, because it's hard to come back from that no matter what.
Yeah. Yeah. It's that fifth item on the...
There's so many knock-on effects. All right. So did we check the boxes on that
one? We did. Yeah.
All right. Adult daycare and community centers. Before we get into it, I would say anecdotally, this to me, I noticed a significant downfall with both my mom and my dad when they kind of, my mom Alzheimer's wise, you know, and my dad with hearing, he, you know, and not socializing,
mm-hmm.
you know, specifically not socializing and isolating yourself. I think that begins to really deprive yourself from a lot of just sensory integration issues that the human being, you kind of need as a human to keep your brain, you know, functioning. That's not scientific at all, but I'm kind of doing it more anecdotally. And I think there's a tremendous need for adult daycare and community centers simply so you're doing something during the day and getting stimulated. Yes, there's someone watching over you, but we're social beings, and staying in a house by yourself, you start isolating yourself. That's a slippery slope on many levels. But
yeah, that's an important potential downside of aging in place is social isolation. As you become less mobile, not having those opportunities, that's where part of aging in place is just having that community network where there are volunteers who may stop by and visit people who are really immobile in their homes. But then, yes, at some point as well, the adult daycare center is really the first step towards providing some care outside of the home. And it's really a more recent development of having these facilities where it's kind of like daycare at the beginning of life. It's now, as you get closer to the end, while the informal caregiver, family or friends, probably in most cases family for this type of scenario, that individual has to go to work. They take the person needing care to the adult daycare center, maybe from like 9 to 5, that kind of situation. At the adult daycare center, that person can receive custodial care. I don't know, in some cases, potentially even some skilled care, or at least monitoring medicines, that sort of thing, and have those social interaction opportunities. Being able to do arts and crafts and play card games, doing different things with people there. Really important both for the individual to get that social interaction and for those caregivers to be able to not completely sacrifice their careers potentially as caregivers.
Are you getting close to or are you in retirement? Well, investing during retirement is a little bit different than during your working years. Your investments are there to help you pay for retirement. And now is when they need to earn their keep. To make sure you're on the right track, download Retirement Researcher's 8 Tips to Becoming a Retirement Income Investor by heading over to retirementresearcher.com/8tips. Again, get Retirement Researcher's 8 Tips to Becoming a Retirement Income Investor by going to retirementresearcher.com/8tips. That's the number 8, tips.
Now, this is where it gets a little tricky, Wayne. And I'm going to take my mom here as an example. In Miami, especially. And Miami, South Florida, I think it stands that they're like the number one Medicare fraud area in the country. It's one of those things, right? And there's like a daycare center on every strip mall, if you will. And I had the toughest time getting my mom into one of these for 3 days a week. Mm-hmm. I'm going to put you on the spot. Why do you think that was?
Well, this
wasn't because I couldn't afford it or anything like that.
That would be nothing to do with this, because this would be more of a...
No, but but they were playing the system. Let me say it like this. They were playing... It says no one wanted, and it was really more Medicaid here. No one wanted to take my mom for 3 days because they wanted just Medicaid people and put them in for 5 days a week. You know,
maybe if somebody's coming 3 days a week, it's hard to fill up that spot the other 2 days a week. So they prefer.
They wouldn't want it, but it was like, the cynic in me tells me some people that were claiming were going 5 days a week weren't really, you know what I mean? There was a game they were playing. You could just tell. But I spent 2 days in Miami just trying to find a place for my mom. And I think I visited 20 of them. Mm-hmm. And none of them wanted my mom for 3 days a week. And she didn't qualify for Medicaid. It was for 5 days or nothing. And they were saying, look, there's no chance. They were just telling me, because this is how it works. This is how the game works. And we're not going to do it. I'm Cuban. They're Cuban. So they were kind of like treating me as like in the loop, if you will. And it was just like, no, I can't do it, buddy, you know, kind of thing. And so this is one of these things that us, you know, we have these notes and we can say this is there. But there's rules to the game around this that unfortunately are kind of weird.
Yeah, I mean,
you know, on many levels.
Can't really comment on that specifically. But even I think just a non-cynical explanation is just those spots are going to be empty the other 2 days of the week. And so they really.
Yeah, but.
But yeah, I don't know.
I would say the people that were on Medicaid, I would venture to say they didn't even know they were there.
I mean,
they didn't even know they were enrolled there.
Yeah, they're not, I guess, incentivized to only say they want to go 3 days a week because that'll lower their bill if Medicaid's paying anyway.
Yeah, some of them weren't, you know, they were saying, okay, let Medicaid pay. I'm only going there twice a week, though. I'm not going there five.
Yeah.
You know, and they were fine, you know, being charged 5 days a week, you know, that kind of thing. And it's a weird sort of racket, at least there in South Florida, hopefully in Des Moines, it's fine.
Okay, now that you've scandalized an entire section of the country.
Yes, yes, yes. Write it, right in, please.
I do not have a lot of background knowledge on this particular
I'm saying it from the standpoint of a son trying to get his mom in a thing. It was like, I couldn't do it after like 2 days of just doing nothing, but, you know, going there, making calls before and after. It's just a nightmare. But here's an option, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's really a more preliminary step. These are individuals who don't necessarily need to go to like a assisted living facility yet. And adult daycare centers are generally much more cost effective than, because an assisted living facility, you now live there full time, whereas the adult daycare center, it's really during business hours. So it's a lot less expensive than an assisted living facility. And it can help further that ability to age at the home because you're still getting the social connection. Your caregivers are able to get a break from caregiving, allowing them to continue that at-home care for longer. That's really where that niche can be to help there. Community centers are different. They're not, it's more you can stop by for social activities, but it's not something generally that you'd pay for or that may have scheduled activities, but it's not, you go there 9 to 5 each day. And that the community centers can also be a good place to also find out about other long-term care options in the community or government programs and different things, different resources available.
You're talking here like the Y, like silver sneakers, that kind of thing?
That could be one. Yeah. The town I live in has a senior living center that's more, I don't know, like a part of the Parks and Rec almost in a way, but it's.
Yeah, yeah. The town being Dallas?
No, not that. I don't live in Dallas proper. I'm in the suburbs. That's what I'm talking about.
Yes. Yes. All right. Small town guy.
Okay.
All right. And then the next one is assisted living facilities.
Uh-huh. Assisted living facilities. This is where you're no longer at home. This is where you actually are now going to move on a more permanent basis. to an apartment in a facility that it's not, you don't need the level of care required with a nursing home. So you still have some independence. It's not going to be 24-hour around the clock care, but there could be a scheduling of different services. So you're scheduled with the activities of daily living that you may need help with at scheduled times. You'll receive that help. Social activities, recreational opportunities, usually like meals are provided, help with providing the medication, housekeeping services, transportation and medical visits. All that can be provided through assisted living, but it's for people who still have a degree of independence so that they don't require the full-time nursing care. And it's usually less expensive as well as full-time nursing care, but more than an adult daycare center.
Yeah, I would say this, Wade, and maybe it's a matter of semantics, but there's even an interesting hybrid between here and before you get to the nursing home. Because I would say my mom is fiercely independent all her life. She was living with my sister. So she's followed this trajectory that Wade laid out. But it got to the point that my sister really couldn't do it anymore. And I actually had to, you know, find a assisted living facility and put my mom there. And interestingly, these are one of these things that they know, right? And there's emotional issues surrounding that, both the family dynamic and then herself realizing that, okay, I'm one step closer to that final stage. It's just, there's no way around it, right? But this is more like a home. It's in Miami. It's like, I don't know. There's a 4-bedroom house. It's treated like a home. But my mom has 24-hour care there with 2 nurses, and yeah, during the day they putz around in the living room, do arts and crafts, stuff like that. I couldn't get her into a daycare. So they do enough stuff there that it takes care of it. They walk around and everything, but there's someone there all the time. So it's kind of a in between. It's not just here you go, you're doing things. They feed her, they help bathe her. If they need to change her, they will. You know, things like that. But it has a hominess to it. It feels like a home. It doesn't necessarily feel like a hospital nursing home where like my dad is.
Assisted living facilities will generally feel more like at home. You have your own apartment or it could be a single house. That would be a more expensive version probably, but same idea that you have your own place still.
You'd be surprised. I mean, this in Miami, there's tons of them. And no, I think we lucked out, but it's been a huge relief over the last 2 years, was it, when I moved my mom there? You probably know as well as I did when I said, hey, I got to go down. But it's been a huge relief, and I feel like so fortunate to have found a place for my mom here where I don't have to worry, okay, what's going on? And she may not know it, but, you know, she's in a good place there. So that this has been a godsend for me.
But yeah, that's the idea. I mean, whenever you start talking about moving into one of these facilities, there's going to be contracts involved, and we could be talking about a lot of potential costs. It could be separated between upfront fees, ongoing monthly expenses. So if you're helping, when someone needs care, they're going to be less capable of doing this. But if you're helping someone, it could be important to have an elder law attorney just take a look at the contract and review the contract with you and make sure you understand all the different provisions and aspects of the care to be provided.
What would be some good questions to ask?
I'm glad you asked. Well, I mean,
timing is everything.
Yeah, these are some things to keep in mind. So questions you'd ask an assisted living facility: if there are monthly fees, which there probably will be, what do they cover? And then how much flexibility is there for the facility to change those fees in the future? Who's doing the assessment about what care is needed and when those needs might change? What kind of limits are placed on the amount of care received? We talked about nursing homes being a higher level of care. So what's the process to determine whether someone's situation has worsened to the point that they can no longer receive the needed care at the facility and would maybe need to then move to a nursing home? So like, what's the trigger to require that sort of transition? What happens if the resident runs out of funds to pay the ongoing fees? And that would be about, can they transition easily to Medicaid? Will they be able to stay in the same facility with Medicaid, or would they have to move to a different facility at the by facility, I mean like apartment that they're in at the facility. If there's any grievances, how are they handled? And this could be about things like the individual doesn't want to join the meals or struggles with taking medication, moving inside or outside, how much freedom do they have to leave and so forth. So how are grievances handled? Anything along those lines? What's the housekeeping schedule? What's the, like, the activities? What's the agenda or schedule for different activities available? How is the staff trained? What qualifications are required for staff members? And what about the situation with dementia? So what does the facility have available to help if individuals who maybe entered into the facility before dementia was a particular issue, but if there's signs of dementia, what happens at that point as well? How does the facility handle that? Do they have the facilities to support dementia, or would that require another move to another location that might be better equipped for those kinds of issues?
The only thing I would add to this, because this seems very formal, and I think there's two types of living facilities if people are listening. There's a living facility like, yes, there's an apartment complex or some sort of campus, you know, like a dorm, if you will, where there's literally 50 people, 100 people, whatever, right? If I put my mom in that, she'd get lost in the mix. She just would. She'd be overwhelmed. It wouldn't work. And so the assisted living facility that worked for her was just a home with like four other ladies. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's two nurses at all times there. And maybe there's among, you know, three or four nurses that do the whole thing. And it's like family run. There's a lot of those side assisted living facilities out there, at least in Miami, like a lot of
them.
And
is that a single house by itself, or is that there's a neighborhood of houses that are all part of?
No, single house by itself. Okay. It's a large house with four rooms for them. Each of them have their own room. And then the nurses, you know, effectively stay in one of the rooms, two of them. And they rotate out, and they literally take care of them like family, you know. It's significantly less expensive than if I were to go to some dorm campus here, like oh, you're mm-hmm. explaining, where they have, you know, you can play blackjack or whatever, gin rummy during the day or what. My mom wouldn't do any of that. Yeah, exactly. Whatever the hell that is, she wouldn't do any of that, you know. And it's. There are things there that are, you can say, less formal in the sense of not all decked out with all of this. And it maintains this family vibe to it. And I don't know how my mom, you know, so there's two different types of assisted living facility. If my mom went to something like this, which is a dorm, I don't know if she would last, you know, frankly. She'd get lost in the mix and she wouldn't get out of her room. Whereas in this one, it's just, you know, I guess what I'm trying to say is there's results vary among this. And you know who your parent is and how they would function. And frankly, this is a place that my mom could probably stay in until the last days of her life, because after a while, they just take her in like family and they'll keep on taking care of her. So
how many pages was the contract for this facility?
This is in Miami,
it's
man.
It's all informal?
it's different in Miami. Right. It's like... that's not how it works in Chinatown. You know, it's Chinatown, Jake. Let's move on, you know, kind of stuff. Right. No, there is a contract, but it's you'd be surprised. There's a big difference between getting this institutionalized service, if you will, mm-hmm. and a small business that's running an assisted living facility. Obviously, there's good and bad in each of those, right? All I'm trying to get at is there's a spectrum. Because when I was in Miami, I did look at this big campus, if you will, like this that you're describing. Mm-hmm. It looked great, you know. It was like the Love Boat, but just in a campus, right? And I'm like, my mom never survived there, as opposed to, hey, look, there's these four Cuban old ladies right next to her. She's going to feel at home. There's these two Cuban nurses that will take care of her, you know, that kind of thing. And like I said, it's been a godsend for both of us. So there's a spectrum of these that you can find. And I'm sure any big city has, you know, both the formal one and the, I don't know, the kind of the ones that make you feel like part of the family, if you will.
Yeah, just that's to your earlier point about there's less regulation in this area. You do need to be careful, but yeah. It's important to find some place where you're comfortable. And this episode is getting a little bit long in the tooth here, so we might want to hold off on the nursing homes and the continuing care retirement communities if you want to call an audible on that.
It's up to you, man.
For the next episode. Otherwise, we're going to get one of our classic hour-plus episodes here.
And we'll call it then. All right, Wade. Well, folks, next one we'll get into the other facilities, nursing homes, CCROs,
CRCs.
All that other stuff. CCR. Let me see. What is it?
Continuing care retirement communities.
Why did I think organization? All right. Yeah. All right. Off we go. All right, everyone. Catch you next week.
Thanks, everyone.
Wade and Alex are both principals in McLean Asset Management and retirement researcher. Both are SEC-registered investment advisors located in Tysons, Virginia. The opinions expressed in this program are for general informational and educational purposes only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual or on any specific securities. To determine which investments may be appropriate for you, consult your financial advisor. All investing comes with a risk, including risk of loss. Past performance does not guarantee future results.